So, people, welcome to Table Set Yourself, podcast number 2, episode 2. Welcome here, and I gotta tell you, I'm Simon, by the way. I'm Simon speaking here, and I gotta tell you, this episode, I promise, or at least I shall try, should be the best episode in English yet. It has to be even better than the first one. Because I just came home from work, from a long working day. Just like the other day, when I was that exhausted, and I was recording this special Table Set Yourself, I don't know what to call it, this first episode, Me and My People, Vices of History. This might be the title. Of course, I didn't publish it yet. But never mind. What I was about to say, coming home, and finding myself quite excited. For what reason, I don't even know. I'm not sure. But let me tell you one thing about that Ukrainian girl I mentioned the last time. It's a difficult situation at work, and therefore I think I'm that nervous now. Because, yeah, I didn't tell her about last episode. I didn't even tell her I wanted to go drink a coffee with her. Like I expressed my wish to share an espresso. Whatever. I'm a shy guy. I don't do things like that. Approaching girls like this, no, it's none of my business. But therefore, I'm recording now this podcast. This is my true source of power and source of manlyhood, I might say. But let's keep going. I think therefore I have this huge desire today that I really gotta demonstrate all my strength in podcasting and gotta demonstrate I'm the biggest, the greatest podcaster in the universe, and there's no doubt about it. And therefore, one more time, I'm speaking to you in English, because I want to speak to the world and tell the world, make the world laugh or whatever, but make them talk of me. They gotta be sich das Maul zerreißen. Die Leute von sich reden, man. Algos. I mean, every kind of propaganda is good propaganda. If you just keep talking about someone, it's good publicity. Yeah. But never mind. I expressed that. I think I want to, yeah, there should be a lot of gossip around me. I want to be like a star. I want to be a podcasting star. The biggest podcaster emerged from the podcast universe yet. And I want to be as big as a movie star. Maybe this, there's this Irish movie I read about. This should be good. Banshees of Inisherin or something like it. This one actor, I think, is quite good. And the other one, too. I already saw them in Brugge, this film about the Belgian city, Brugge. But that's besides the point. It's totally besides the point. And I'm confused. Therefore, I'm not sure if I can deliver here what I promised. But I'm quite keen. I'm quite decided, firmly decided on delivering now. Yeah, there's this problematic situation now at work. I don't even know. I think she ignores me, but maybe it's the other way around. Maybe I ignore her, and I don't know what to do. It's a bit awkward, but and here, nearby me, you hear speaking another Ukrainian girl. She's about totally the same age. Not as me, no. She's 22, I think, the girl beside me, and her boyfriend too this year. They're so young, yeah. And Ukrainians, I don't know. I like this language. In another recording I made of my German podcast, there was yet another Ukrainian roommate, also a girl, but not this one. that's moved in now. There's a lot of change always here in this communal space. It's a communal house, yeah, communist house. It's in Vice City located, communist city. So Vice City, communist room, and nearby there was this other girl, yeah, and she yelled so loudly one time, and it's in my podcast. You can hear it. I don't know. I think episode 67. Yeah, I remember all my episodes. You can ask me about it. I remember all of them and all that I said in them. And I think it's in there, 67 or something like it. And yeah, she was so nice. I don't know why, but she was discussing something in Ukrainian, maybe with her boyfriend, because this very young girl, she only had 19 years, I think. She said, yeah, she had a boyfriend in Ukraine, and he was still 18 or something. And and she was yelling. I don't know what about, or maybe with the mother, it doesn't matter. But I found this such a nice co-production in my podcast. I mean, I'm not even allowed maybe to use her voice, or I could be sued. Yeah, she could sue me, totally. But please don't. Her name was Olena, and I greet her so warmly, kindly. If she's listening now that she moved out, and these other Ukrainians moved in here, but that's beside the point. What I was going on is, of course, this other, yet another Ukraine, too many. But of course, I welcome them and say, "Yeah, you're welcome here. I'm so glad you escaped." Because this one boy, my neighbor here, he told me about. Yeah, of course, I'm pro, totally pro refugees. I'm left-wing communist, but it's a different question. Now, he told me about how he got to escape Ukraine because, of course, he's so young. He shouldn't be allowed to cross the border, as we all heard about this Ukrainian laws for men under 60, 65. And he said he had to pay for a fake document, fake invalid, fake medical document, certificate that he's incapable of serving in the army. And he told me that he paid maybe $2,000, dollars. Yeah, they told me the price in dollars. Although by now, of course, dollars worth more than a euro, right? I don't know. I don't care. But so he told me this, and this other roommate, there's yet another Ukrainian couple that's living downstairs, also in this communal house. And this guy's like 30, and he told me also, of course, he did the same thing and paid about $2,000. But interestingly, they clarified that now prices are much higher than this, because when they came, that was in summer maybe, and yeah, prices, they skyrocketed. It's like the oil and gas prices. So now you have to pay between 5,000 and $10,000. Yeah, dollars, of course. Dollars, yeah. You have to pay that to be able to leave Ukraine. And just wanted to mention that in order, yeah, to point this out, what kind of a class society this is. This is horrible. If you are a small worker there like me, well, my class position, I always mention this to be totally honest and in line with my communist conscience, that my class position is intermediate, because my parents are, well, I wouldn't say they're rich, no, but they own a house, and yeah, houses are quite valuable these days. They own a house, they built it 20 years ago, and yeah, they have something. I mean, they will retire in not such a long time. They have enough, of course, to live prosperously from their savings. And yeah, but as a worker, as a programmer, I work, and this is my everyday work, the work I do and stuff. Yeah, I don't know, I make things happen. Yeah, I create all these database tables and stuff and magic stuff. Yeah, but let's get to the point, cut to the chase. So I'm intermediate because, yeah, I always get pampered by my parents. I always get supported when I was studying, they financed me. I also lived there, and I could make some long voyages, long journeys around the world, and also was able, well, partly because of all, because I also had something in my savings account, because yeah, always there's gifts and stuff from grandparents and parents, and therefore I could save maybe a lot, and therefore I'm in a totally different position. And I told myself after studying, after finishing my bachelor's degree in computer science, I told myself, well, let's go, I'll go see the world a bit in Europe and Latin America, and also Northern America, California, I like this so much, Arizona, Nevada. I like this special place, this kind of desert landscape. It's so beautiful. And yes, I'm not anti-American in any way, of course, but let's get to that later. I'm so pro-American. Such a beautiful countryside, beautiful places, and of course the people are, yeah, you gotta love them. I mean, you can't really blame them for their brutal terrorist regime they have over there. It's a regime that is brutally neo-colonizing the world and waging wars, as I pointed out, wars all over the world. But let's get to that later. You can't blame the people, of course, no, never do. As you can't blame the Germans, nor the Ukrainians for their government, nor the Russians. Now, let's just get this expressed out, pressed out of me, that my class position is somewhere between the proletariat and the semi-bourgeoisie, let's say, the not the upper bourgeoisie, but, well, whatever. I think you get the point that not in such a desperate position as a proletarian who is living from month to month from his wage, but still I don't have that many savings that I could live eternally from them. And but still I have my parents who are always kind of fostering me, and so this is my semi position, intermediate position. And yeah, I forgot what did I want to say. Oh yeah, right. I was going on about Ukraine and that the real proletarian, the poor proletarian who doesn't have this kind of savings, then, well, he's living from month to month, working there in a factory or some kind of shitty whatever. Of course, work is way less paid over there than here, and it's shitty in that sense. I mean, work condition and pay, but yeah, he doesn't have the savings. Then the army calls, and he's subscribed to the army. He's in, and then he goes up to the front, and it's so terrifying to think of that. It just depends on this, if you have these 2,000 or 3,000 bucks. And you have the courage to even come here. I mean, that's also the thing I admire my roommate here, and my roommates, and also the girls, of course, they supported maybe their partners in this decision to come here. And yes, because it would be also, of course, some people think like this, you have to be patriotic, and if it's the fight for your country, then you have to fight it, even putting your life on the line. And that's totally wrong, of course, for these imperialist capitalist states. You should never put your life on the line. Maybe for a socialist state like the Soviet Union, of course, there was this heroic fight against the Nazis. And yeah, we got to come to that, right? We've got to come to this and how much the Soviets contributed and Americans also contributed, but they claimed far too much from the from all the victory glory. They made it look like they did all the work, when in fact the Soviets did the work.
fucking Americans just came in late and yeah, claimed all the glory. But I'm looking for something here. Because I want to read that later from history if we get to that. But let me talk freely. Like Sigmund Freud said, freie Assoziation, free associations. That's what I like to do. So, moving on. It's so brutal to think of that. Yeah, these Ukrainians then go to the front and maybe get killed there. So many killed. It was said these last month that there's heavy fightings in Bakhmut. It's this small city in the eastern Donbas, and it's so senseless. It's like Verdun, like this place where the fighting, the meat grinder in World War One, took place between Germans and French, and it's kind of the same situation today. Also, the weather looks not so friendly. It's all muddy, which surprises me, because here in Germany, again, we had a little snow today, and we had already snow in December, but then it got really warm over New Year. It got like 15 degrees, not Fahrenheit, of course, some stupid Americans with your Fahrenheit foots, Fahrenheit Celsius, of course, yeah. So, 15 degrees, I don't know what's that in Fahrenheit, maybe 70, whatever, I don't care. Nobody cares, Americans, just keep on, learn some real scaling units like the rest of the world. So, it's so brutal, but I don't want to go on in length to that, because we all know that, and also before this one special war started in Ukraine, there were so many wars on the world, and it's a brutal capitalist framework, and we don't have to think too much about how much horrors there are in the world, because if we do that, then we'll get defeatist and say, oh no, it can't, nothing can be done, it seems this the pile of problems is so huge, and who could know what there could be done. And this is exactly what the ruling class wants us to think, and only this one thing I gotta join, I gotta aggregate, add. I gotta add this, because I have this conservative friend. I was already, I was going on about him, going off, whatever, going nuts. Yeah, and, I mean, in some cases, I hate him. I hate his guts. Stupid conservative scum. Yeah. But, so he said, oh yeah, it's totally normal to fight for your country, and I would fight for Germany, of course, because Germany is one of the nicest countries, the best countries. If everyone wants to come here, then yeah, that proves that, and therefore you better fight for Germany. And yeah, so it's so stupid, but also it's I gotta say, I don't blame him in this way. It's so far away for Germany. I mean, as a German, you know, you're so secured, you never have to fight your own wars. I mean, also as American, not of course, you can join the military, but if you want. But these countries are at the hierarchy of imperialism, very high up the ladder, and they don't have to fight their own wars. They just are causing wars, incentivating wars all around the world, and sometimes contributing directly with their military, like also now in Ukraine. Of course, they contribute with all kinds of weapons delivery. But about this conservative friend, I call him that, Benjamin, my dear friend. So he was saying, totally normal to defend your country, and it's not normal to flee now from Ukraine. I don't understand this. Why wouldn't you flee? Why would you flee from such a country? And that's so horrendous. I mean, I don't think he actually thinks about what he says when we talk about this. That's what I hate so much. I'm such a political person and want to have these discussions, but what is there to discuss with such a scumbag, really, who's uttering these words, these thoughts, that No, as a Ukrainian, you should stay there and fight for your country because it's normal, it's natural, and it's so important that this strip of land there, that's occupied now by Russia, is part of Ukraine. It's so stupid because also here in Germany, I wouldn't fight if France came and invaded. I would say, no, why? This is not my country. I don't care. I don't give a fuck if they rule us from Paris or from Berlin. It's the same. Paris is even closer to me living here in the south. And yeah, I would like it so much. They can take over the French. But, and yeah, this friend, I mean, with his position, he's directly incentivizing, moralizing, and saying to Ukrainians, oh, well, that's the thing to do. But of course, it's not only him, it's also Ukrainians and also the girls that come here. Not like those two girls that are now living here, but the, well, let's say girls that come here alone and they think they're. Think, well, people, the thing is, we are all, of course, indoctrinated and ruled by the mainstream media. Of course, no gender knows this better than everyone. But if you're a normal person, that means not an agendist type of media deconstruction, educated person, then you're just thinking, yeah, the way you get into this way of thinking when you consume all these media products, especially now in Ukraine. It's so censored and so patriotic, of course, the press. And yeah, you think, oh yeah, it's normal to fight for your country. And but I want to express this, that you're also incentivizing those poor people that have to stay home, and you're totally accepting this framework of thinking and saying, yeah, it's like this. And no, at least you should, I mean, we all should, it doesn't matter which nationality, but we all should speak up and say this war has to end. I mean, yeah, there's many wars, but this war is now so close, it's we can't focus on that, and we should say, yeah, it should end. There should be peace negotiations under any circumstances, and it doesn't matter if we, the Ukrainians, lose this strip of land. Well, maybe it's a bitter pill, but we have to swallow it, because really, it's more important to save those lives than to save the land for Ukraine. But okay. Now let's keep on moving. So with this last episode, I put myself in an uncomfortable position regarding everything there is about love, and yeah, because I'm totally in a relationship with my girlfriend from Peru, as I mentioned, and therefore you shouldn't, of course, be thinking about other girls. But there I was expressly, really admitting it. Totally admitting I was thinking about this other girl, and also because of her, of course. I'm talking English now because we always talk English. She doesn't speak German so well, and therefore I have this need I felt those last couple of months to speak also a little bit English in my podcast to train myself maybe, because yeah, if you feel enchanted by a person, I want to use that word, keep using this, yes, right, it's an enchantment, because I used it that one time. If you feel enchanted, then it's this way, yeah, you feel like everything you do in your life is for that person, and you just got to do it as well as you can to make an impression, make a lasting, maybe something, I don't know. Now, I think I've said enough or too much already. I don't know which one it is, but it doesn't matter. And I see there the snowflakes falling right in front of my window. And I tell you, dear people, I'm so glad you
walked into that program here, zapped into it, and I'm so glad. And I want to keep you satisfied, keep you just keep you here. Don't put this program out. I want to until the last. Sorry, I was here on YouTube, and yeah, but that's what I was saying. I want to keep you tuned in, so tune in, lay back, and enjoy this piece of music. I always like to put music in my podcast, and here I'm gonna look for something that pleases you, dear English, American, and worldwide listeners. Let's surprise ourselves with what we find here, and then we move on to some literature and history stuff and whatever comes into my free associations. So, but first, Bühne frei, free the stage for the music. Yeah, let's get, yeah, this is crazy. I think this could be.
But it's enough to make me wonder what's in store for us. It's lust, it's torturous. You must be a sorceress, cause you just did the impossible. Gain my trust. Don't play games, it'll be dangerous if you fuck me over. Cause if I get burnt, I'ma show you what it's like to hurt. Cause I've been treated like dirt before you, and love is evil. Spell it backwards, I'll show you. Nobody knows me, I'm cold. Walk down this road all alone. It's influence far from my own. It's the path I've chosen to go. Frozen in snow, I show no emotion whatsoever. So don't ask me why I have no love for these motherfucking hoes. Bloodsuck and sock your business. What the fuck is off with this? I've tried in this department, but I ain't had no luck with this. It sucks, but it's exactly what I thought it would be like trying to start over. I got a hole in my heart, but some kind of emotional roller coaster. Something I won't go on till you toy with my emotions. So it's over. It's like an explosion every time I hold you. I wasn't joking when I told you. You take my breath away. You're a supernova. And I'm a space-bound rocket ship, and now I'm submerged. When I'm with you, I get the shakes. My body aches when I ain't with you. I have zero strength. There's no limit on how far I would go. No boundaries, no length. Why do we say that until we get that person that we think gonna be that one? And then once we get them, it's never the same. You want them when they don't want you. Soon as they do, feelings change. It's not a contest and I ain't none, no conquest for no mate. I wasn't looking when I stumbled onto you. Must have been fake, but so much is at stake. What the fuck does it take? Let's cut to the chase. But a door shuts in your face. Promise me if I cave and then break and leave myself open, that I won't be making a mistake. Cause I'm a spacebound rocket ship and your heart's a fool. No longer me that you want, but I love you so much it hurts. Never mistreated you once. I pour my heart out to you, let down my guard, swear to God. I blow my brains in your lap, lay here and die in your arms. Drop to my knees and I'm bleeding. I'm trying to stop you from leaving. You won't even listen, so fuck it. I'm trying to stop you from breathing. I put both hands on your throat. I sit on top of you squeezing till I snap your neck like a popsicle stick. An impossible reason I can think of to let you walk about this house and let you live. Tears stream down both of my cheeks. Now let you go and just care. Before I put that gun to my temple, I told you this. And I would do anything for you to show you how much I told you. But it's over now, it's too late to save our love. Just promise me you'll think of me every time you look up in the sky and see a star. Cause I'm a spacebound rocket ship and your heart's the moon.
So, people, this is me again. Yeah, this was crazy. And after that, I, YouTube just, it was in my YouTube playlist. After that came the song of Eminem. But maybe I have to cut this out because it's so brutal. I mean, Eminem, spacebound. I'm spacebound. I'm aiming right at you. Yeah. So, okay. Let's finish this up. I found the page where I left the book of Stalin last time, and we gotta take it up from there. And after that, I've maybe some special text from another book for you, the book of wisdom or the book of craziness. But let's firstly, look into the book of history. This is again Stalin, Man of History by Ian Gray. And of course, we should also read from the master himself, from Lenin and his writings, and also Stalin's writings. But for today, we take a look into history. And we first maybe got to learn about the circumstances in which Lenin and Stalin and all the Soviet leaders acted in these circumstances, the context of the world politics and the world history. They set boundaries for them. And so therefore, there is no big dictator who runs everything and is aware of everything. No, it's not like that. Never was. And so we were about here in the 1930s and all these problems with Nazi Germany coming, Nazis coming to power in Germany, and building Germany into a strong military and economic power again. Let's move on here. This is page 239. The Berlin-Rome Axis was formed in October 1936 at a time when tension between Moscow and Berlin was mounting. The Nazis were increasingly raucous. Oh, nice word, raucous. Don't know what it means, but it's kind of self-explaining, don't you think? Raucous. In their hostility toward Soviet Russia. Painstakingly, Stalin continued to avoid the least provocation that might lead to war. He was then anxiously looking to the east. A German-Japanese anti-Comintern pact was signed on November 25th, 1936. So Comintern is the Communist International. It's like a association of communist forces, but of course Soviet Russia was the only real communist force in that time. Unlike after the war, there was also China, but at that time still there was this Comintern. It appeared to be a simple defense agreement. He suspected, however, that the two governments had agreed on a secret plan to coordinate action against Russia and China. His suspicion was proved correct when one of his agents procured copies of their secret correspondence. Clashes with Japanese troops on the Manchurian frontier increased his fears. Further troops were hurried to the region. A new security treaty was signed with the Mongolian Republic, and in the following year a non-aggression pact was agreed with China. But the pressure on Russia mounted relentlessly. In March 1938, Hitler seized Austria. A crisis over the Sudeten Germans in Czechoslovakia followed. So Sudeten is like this small strip at the very western part of Czechoslovakia. And Hitler seized that, and after that he also seized all of Czechoslovakia, or at least the Czech part of it, and he left Slovakia, Slovakia. But never mind. Only that also I might mention here a little personal fact that my grandfather, the one I was talking about, he sadly already died 10 years ago. But he was from Czechoslovakia, and he fled in 45 when war ended. He was from a German family there, but not from the Sudetenland. This is it was further in Czechoslovakia. I think Brno is the city. Moving on. And this is of course the grandparents I was telling. This whole biography, my family history, post-war history in this one episode, Vices of History, Me and My People. This splendid episode. I don't know why I like to think so much, remember this so much, this episode. Oh, yeah.
Because, yeah, in that episode, it was like I was letting off all my pressure. I was coming home at 7 from a long day at work, and I failed to deliver the program deploy. It was the last day of work before a 5-day vacation there, and I felt so exhausted and felt I had given it all, but at the end, I couldn't deploy the right file, and it was a mess, and I didn't even know what if it was my mistake, but it wasn't even my mistake. So I was frustrated, but I just let out all the stress that day, and I think that's what made this episode so great. But never mind. Moving on. The belligerence of the Nazi leaders and the threats of violence repeated by German propaganda unnerved the British and French prime ministers. They held anxious consultations with Hitler, and both governments agreed to bring pressure to bear on Czechoslovakia to surrender the borderlands in the interests of peace. Stalin was not readily unnerved. He responded at once with proposals that Britain, France, and Soviet Russia should present a united front against Germany and prepare with the Czechoslovak High Command a combined military plan. All three powers should invoke the League of Nations and prepare to enforce the provisions of the Charter in the event of German aggression. So Stalin proposed this. He worked very eagerly for this military pact with the Western powers, France and England, against Nazi Germany. Litvinov was a Soviet official, I think the Secretary of State at that time. Litvinov also confirmed that the Soviet Union would stand by the terms of the Mutual Assistance Pact of 1935 if France too would honor its obligations under the pact. So there, with France, there existed already this pact, but the French didn't take this so seriously, so let's keep reading. The Soviet plan would have averted or at least delayed war for a considerable time, which Stalin was playing for desperately. But France was anxious to back out of its treaty obligations, and notwithstanding strong opposition among many conservative members of parliament, the British government showed reluctance to support France if it were involved in defending Czechoslovakia. The Soviet government was not consulted or included in the Munich Conference, which, meeting on September 28th to 30th, 1938, surrendered Czechoslovakia into the hands of Germany. So this is so crazy, I think. Earlier it was all about Sudetenland, which is only this one small strip, but then a few months later the English and French they just come together with the German government, with Hitler, and say, yeah, you can have all of Czechoslovakia. It's a sovereign country. They're just passing it over. The same with Austria, also against the annexation of Austria. France and England didn't speak up, as did Soviet Russia, and said that, yeah, Austria should be defended. It can't be accepted that but of course I might add here, people who think there's any kind of parallel between this historical moment pre-World War and today with Putin invading Ukraine, can tell you you're totally wrong, and you're totally full of shit. I don't even want to bother with that kind of bullshit, because yeah, it's just this way around. You think, if you're indoctrinated by mainstream media, you think, yeah, Putin's like the next Hitler, and I want to tell you, yeah, it's false, but there's some kind of truth in it. It's the other way around. I mean, if you look at it the other way around, yeah, we, the Western powers here, Scholz, and symbolized by Olaf Scholz, Bundeskanzler, or Joe Biden, yeah, those guys, they're really a bit like Hitler. I mean, if you look at it like this, yeah, there's something to it. They, with their politics, grand strategy, power strategy, and invading countries like Afghanistan, but also of course, sending arms to war zones, inciting wars all over the world. You can see a parallel there. But, and I want to tell you this, yes, you, if you believe in that mainstream stuff, you're kind of, you are also totally guilty. Of course, yeah, you are guilty because you live in a democracy, you have the right to speak up, to vote, and yet you take this crap in and just say it's okay, spit it out as the mainstream media puts it inside your head, and you totally go along with this regime, and therefore you, I gotta tell you that you also would have gone along back then in Nazi Germany. You would have been totally a Mitläufer, as we say, a passerby, Mitläufer, someone who walks with the flow or goes with the stream. And that's the reality of most people, I mean, 99% in all countries. But let's move on, keep moving. The Western powers failed completely to respond to the Soviet proposals for a grand alliance under the aegis of the League. Churchill observed, the Soviet offer was in effect ignored. They were not brought into the scale against Hitler and were treated with an indifference, not to say disdain, which left a mark on Stalin's mind. Events took their course as if Soviet Russia did not exist. For this, we afterwards paid dearly. So this was a quote by Churchill. Mistrust of Soviet intentions and good faith had mounted afresh in the West. Communist propaganda had stirred new suspicions. At the time of the economic recession in the late 1930s, the Soviet press loudly predicted left-wing victory in Spain and the collapse of the capitalist system. So yeah, there was this ongoing civil war in Spain where Soviet Russia interfered, but it didn't have the effect of winning the war for the pro communist powers, and instead the fascists won under Franco's command. He ruled there until 75. Also there, France and England didn't want to support Soviet or the communist democratic republican forces in Spain, but said, yeah, we'll leave it to them, we'll see, don't want to have another front. They were already scared of Hitler and Germany and backing off and saying, oh well, just leave us alone, you can, yeah, you can do whatever you want, Hitler, but leave us alone. This was the real coward posture. But moving on. It is indeed surprising that Stalin permitted propaganda of this kind at a time when he was urgently pursuing alliances with the Western powers. Yeah, of course, they always said, yeah, we gotta bring about communist revolution, but it never happened in the Western countries. But still, it's logical to at least pronounce this kind of propaganda. More serious in its impact on influential Western opinion was the savage purge of the Red Army, which, in the opinion of many, destroyed the confidence of Western Europe in the strength of his army and the strength of his government. It completely reversed the generally favorable impression of the British and French generals who had observed Red Army maneuvers in 1936. But while Stalin could easily have restrained or changed the content of Soviet propaganda, he would have regarded any change in his decision to purge the armed forces as being out of the question. He remained firmly convinced that the armed forces had to be pruned and cleansed of all unreliable elements in preparation for the coming war. So yeah, the purges is also a topic I covered in German. I can't go on in depth about that now, but you have to, only gotta say this, you have to affirm the communist project as a whole. And yeah, there were also very dark spots and people who got purged and murdered or sent to Gulag, but as a whole it was a good project, and it's not clear, maybe this purges were also necessary for the strength of the army and to be reliable, because we saw also in Ukraine there are many collaborators, many like Bandera, the Ukrainian hero, now nationalist hero. Many are like this and follow his lead and say, oh yeah, let's be Nazis, we gotta beat those Russians, and Nazis are way superior. And the same goes for the Red Army, of course. And therefore, I don't know, we have to study history. I can't make up my mind finally on this, but it's only something to think about, that this purge was also necessary in that sense, to say, yeah, we need reliable people in the army, and even if that means them purging over the half of our officers, it was still worth it. And we don't know how would history have gone differently if this purge hadn't occurred, and therefore we mustn't be revisionist and say, oh yeah, this and that, Stalin did wrong. No, in the grand scheme, Stalin did the right things. But moving on, Stalin was angered and humiliated by the disdainful attitude of the Western powers, but he made no public comment at the time. He was too deeply concerned about Russia's almost complete isolation, and he would say nothing that might exacerbate the position. He had no doubt about the motives of Britain and France in agreeing to the dismemberment of Czechoslovakia by Germany. Clearly, they had promised Hitler a free hand in the East in return for peace in the West. As he remarked later, one might think that the districts of Czechoslovakia were yielded to Germany as the price for her undertaking to launch war on the Soviet Union. This was a quote by Stalin. He said this. Oh yeah, maybe they were talking about this in this Munich or whatever conference and saying, yeah, you gotta start that war, you gotta take on those Soviets, and therefore we give you Czechoslovakia. So it's kind of a conspiracy theory, right, put up by Stalin here, but it might be true, and it doesn't matter so much. What is a fact, 100% fact, I liked to mention from a book I also read in German from Ludo Martens, read in my German podcast episodes 139. If you know German, you can listen to that. And the important point that there was no world war, there were different wars, of course, in Japan and China, but also in Europe there were totally different wars, and it wasn't the same war that Soviets had to fight, because the Nazis had a holy hatred against the Soviets and Jews. They were always talking about Jew-Bolshevism, Bolshevik Jews, and those were the two groups they were so keen to exterminate. And they said, yeah, we gotta also kill the women, kill their children, because if not, in a few generations, there will be the Bolshevik threat again. And much of this Nazi propaganda was also taken over by American propagandists after 45, and they just crossed out the Jew part of it and left the Bolshevik in it and said, oh yeah, those bad guys over there in Moscow, the Bolsheviks, and it's a great danger to humanity. But okay, that's totally 100% factual. You can look it up in kinds of there's tons of propaganda material that was copied with few changes from Nazi Germany, and yeah, material, ideas, slogans, everything, just the whole idea of a big enemy in the East was taken over from Nazi Germany and applied by the US after they won, and they were in strong position beginning with 1945-46. So yeah, and this is the crucial point, that the war in the East was much more savage. The Germans killed millions and millions of civilians and put them to the concentration camps and killed them there, or killed them right at the spot. And of course also the soldiers, so many Russian soldiers were killed by the millions, and because they were not as good trained as the Germans, not that good equipped. Russia was still an underdeveloped country compared to the highly industrialized Germany, and yeah, therefore that's so many millions. And maybe the Germans, when they lost 10,000 or 50,000 in a battle, the Russians lost millions.
And that's a fact. And the Western Front, there was no war at this scale. I mean, France and England, Britain declared war after Hitler invaded Poland in 39, but still there was not this great war at the Western Front. It all went very slow, and then of course France was conquered very quickly, and so there the war is already over, and yeah, Britain at least kept on fighting. But it's this point, of course, you can also be compassionate and thank the Britons for their fight against Nazism. Of course, you have to be grateful as a German and say, yeah, this is it's a great shame of history to be this country, this people, in this state, is the state that once was waging this kind of Nazi wars and Nazi barbarism on other people. But still, yeah, thank you. But it isn't simply right to acknowledge that it's not the same kind of war. Of course, they also died, Britain and American soldiers, but not at these large numbers and not in these brutal circumstances like the Russians. And also because the Nazi view on Russians and on Soviets was different. They saw in the Western countries potential alliance, potential friends, and said, yeah, maybe we could make peace with them against the real enemy, the Soviets, the Bolsheviks. And yes, so therefore it's two different fronts, two different wars. And it should be remembered as this today. But okay. Okay, so I was quoting Stalin with this conspiracy theory. But he was surprised by the conduct of France in failing to honor its treaty obligation to Czechoslovakia. So France had already a treaty with Czechoslovakia. Yeah. Russia had not been guilty of bad faith. It had undertaken to stand by France in the event of war. Britain was not committed in alliance with Russia or Czechoslovakia, and so could not be charged with bad faith, only with having played an ignoble role in the sacrifice of a small nation. Ignoble is like maybe the contrary of noble. Stalin could not understand how two great powers, Britain and France, had allowed themselves to be so defeated in diplomacy by Hitler, except in return for guarantees of peace in the West. He overestimated the moral and military preparedness of the two countries, while underestimating the general fear and suspicion felt toward Soviet Russia. He had to accept that they were enemies, and in any case that they were too infirm of purpose and degenerate to make reliable allies. So degenerate, I like this word, yeah. I used it a lot in German because we're all this way today in this capitalist, under these circumstances, we're so degenerate. And so are this... So were these two nations. But at this point, I really gotta say, people, I'm a little tired, I gotta stop here, and we still didn't come to the non-aggression pact between Soviet Russia and Germany, but it's only important to remember this. Yes, it's not... it doesn't look good if you make this kind of pact with a fascist country, but if you analyze history in depth, then you can see quite clearly that it was not Soviet Russia's fault, but indeed it was the only option left because of this this attitude by France and Britain, who didn't want to join in an alliance with Soviet Russia, and were totally on this path of selling everything to Hitler and saying him, oh, just leave us alone here, and you can attack Russia, you can have everything in Europe, leave us... the only thing is we don't want to fight another war. We remember World War One, and yeah, everyone remembered it. Also, the German people were not so eager about fighting a war. It was totally different as in than before World War One in 1914. There was so much optimism. So yeah, people were
I don't know, but this remember today, like people were dancing in the streets and saying, oh yeah, finally we can join the war, we can fight. But then 4 years later, of course, the terrors of war came clear to all the people, also the ones who stayed at home and maybe starved, didn't have enough to eat, shortages and everything. And therefore, also in the 30s, also in 39, the Germans were surprised by this beginning war against Poland and said, oh well, we thought Hitler would avoid this at any cost. But yeah, this was the general feeling. And why did it come that far? I mean, yeah, you have to look at the role that France and Britain played in this. Why did it come this far that the World War broke out if in these societies, among these people, everyone was remembering still in their families how horrible war is and such a big world war is, and that it should be avoided at any cost. But okay, let's move on to another subject. This is a very short chapter I'm reading here, not a history chapter, but a chapter by a very admired American writer and journalist, gonzo journalist, Hunter S. Thompson. And I always regretted not having read more from him in my German podcast, but now I can do it finally in the original language. So this is Hunter Thompson, known for his work also Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. It's a brilliant book. I recommend you read the book. The movie I don't even know, but yeah, it's so great, and also his journalist pieces. And I only wanted to look this up, the author of this Stalin book, Ian Gray. I want to know which nationality does he have. Is he a, oh, it's a musician today, it seems? No, but I'm looking for this other Ian Gray. So Ian Gray, historian, I want to know this, from which country does he come from? Ah, New Zealand born. Therefore, maybe he's so objective. He's not a patriot in any, well, maybe in a Commonwealth, but not in the British sense. But maybe he felt attracted to a Commonwealth British patriotism. He lived from 1918 to 1996, born in New Zealand. Joined the Australian Navy in 1941. And was posted at Naval Intelligence of the Admiralty in London, then serving in the Soviet Union as an officer. Served for 2.5 years in the Russian North, acting as a liaison for British destroyers of the Soviet Navy in the Arctic. Well, interesting, but let's move on to this US American guy, Hunter Thompson. And I have this book here, Songs of the Doomed, More Notes on the Death of the American Dream. I think this is his last volume of smaller journalist pieces, reportage. So I don't know what's the word in English. And it's dates from the late 80s, I think, in the 90s. In 2003, I think he shot himself. Committed suicide. And I want to read this. I don't even know what this chapter is, but yeah, he was part of the alternative hippie culture in the 60s and joined the Hells Angels, wrote his first acclaimed book about Hells Angels. It's titled Hells Angels. But let's read this very short story here, only a two-pager, and then we finish this. LSD-25, Res Ipsa Locitur, which means something like the thing speaks for itself. Oh yeah, LSD. I first got into acid when I lived in Big Sur in the early 60s. Mike Murphy and Joanna, a Stanford research psychiatrist, were experimenting with it. The idea the idea fascinated me. But they said, wait a minute, there are some people who cannot take acid, and you are one of them. You're the most violent son of a bitch that's ever walked the earth. We both like you, and we probably understand you. It's just too dangerous for you to take acid. You might kill us all, or kill yourself. Mike had been into weird Indian drugs for a long time, and I gathered that he had to be locked up himself when he took it. He was a pretty peaceful guy, but he had run amok in Palo Alto, so I took their word for it. I stayed away from it then, and I didn't have any for a long time after that. Even later, when I was around Casey's place, I refused to take it, because I figured I might go crazy and do something violent. Wait, Kent Casey, I recommend this novel, The Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test by Tom Wolfe, also an American writer, and he describes this in Kent Casey kind of commune. Those hippies taking lots of acid back then. Yeah, The Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test is a recommend. But then finally I took it down there, in a fit of despair, the night that the angels showed up. Casey had invited them down after I'd introduced him to them. And I felt responsible for whatever was going to happen. I thought the angels were going to beat people up and rape them. So I figured, why not just get it on? And I asked somebody to give me a hit of acid. I thought, whatever I do can't be worse than what's already going on around me. So I may as well do it. I can't stand it straight. I took it, and it was quite a ride. I went completely out of my head, and I had a wonderful time. Didn't bother a soul. Not a hint of violence. I thought, I've gone to the bottom of the well here, and the animals not down here, down there. The one they said was there. I had a lot of confidence, and you need a lot. You have to give yourself over to your instinct, because with a head full of acid, you can't pull back. You're going to do whatever you feel like doing. You can't repress anything. If you're going to jump out the window, you're going to jump out the window. If you're going to get violent, you're going to get violent. But I didn't. Instead, I usually get very calm. I get into music and talking and laughing and heavy thinking, images coming, connections. But they come so fast, it's very hard to come back from the trip and still keep them intact. Nobody's really described an acid experience properly, because it's impossible to come back to one, and you can't really describe it. That's why it's hard to write on mescaline too, because your mind is going 4 times as fast as your hands can go, and you get disorganized and you can't keep your mind in phase with your fingers. That's why I have to get increasingly faster typewriters. Whatever they make, if it's faster, I'll buy it. Woody Creek, March 1990. Yeah, this was this story from 1990, when he was already a little older. Not like in the 60s, when he was part of this youth movement, but still a little older, like me, maybe. I'm also almost 30. And yeah, Woody Creek is in Colorado. That's where he used to live. So a small town in Colorado. And I gotta say, yeah, people, this is it. I kind of overdid it. I also felt exactly this, that you can't go back once you push the red button, the recording button. You can't go back. And although you feel this, this is a little tiring speaking to length, and still I gotta do it. But now I feel I've reached the limit, the maximum, and I don't know if I could fulfill my promise from the beginning. I don't think so, because this episode was truly one of a kind, this one I delivered back then, and it's all got to do with work and the stress, and it's a beautiful thing also being working, a worker, proletarian, so beautiful. But of course we gotta bring about revolution to really free all the working forces, all the productive forces, and only then I can also make longer podcasts, interminable, endless podcasts. And with that, I'd like to
tell you for today good night and good luck. This was Table Set Yourself official number 2. Thank you for joining in, tuning in, dropping out, tune in, drop out, and check in next time at Table Set Yourself.